Tape 1, Side 2, House Committee on the Judiciary, Full Committee Meeting, January 23rd, 1977, 2 p.m., Room 350.
How are you?
Being the judicial come to order, the clerk will note those members present, the balance are excused. The first item on the agenda is a public hearing on House Bill 2074. I don't have a sign-up sheet.
Chairman, if anybody would like an explanation, I'd be glad to give one.
Okay, Judge Dennehy, you're second here, but I'm going to let you go first.
Oh, no, that's all right, no.
No, that's fine.
Well, that was the bill that we were sorry to sponsor, but created in order. We've been going down and down on cases in Pendleton, and now with our new jurisdiction being only discretionary jurisdiction in the Court of Appeals, I don't think we're going to have enough cases to justify a mandatory 2 terms in Pendleton a year. If there are enough cases, we'd be most pleased to go over there. We like to go over there. But it just didn't seem in the cards that we should be required to go there twice a year with 7 judges and hear 1, 2, 3 cases. The Court of Appeals has assured the Eastern Oregon Bar that they would come at least, I'm not sure, once or twice a year, so they will not be without a court sitting over there.
I would ask the witnesses to state their name and address for the record.
Arnold Dennehy, Chief Justice, Oregon Supreme Court.
For the committee's information, I contacted Representative Duff during this morning's board sessions, and his comment was that he didn't see any reason for the Supreme Court to go to Pendleton either. So either they don't want to come up there, and they're in support of the bill at this point. Are there questions from members of the committee?
Yes, Chief Justice, have you had any contacts from the bar itself over there?
Yes.
The members of the Board of Bar Governors over there, how does the bar itself relate to this?
I'll try and be accurate with my recollection. They kind of hate to see it come, but they realize that it's inevitable. And as a result, they asked the Court of Appeals if they'd come, and I think are satisfied with the Court of Appeals assuring that they'll come once or twice a year.
Well, I can see the purpose for the bill, and it seems very reasonable to me, and I'd have no opposition to it at all, but I'm wondering how much they're going to scream if at all.
How much they're going to scream?
Yeah.
Well, I feel reasonably certain from talking to them that there won't be any screaming. I hope that assurance is inaccurate when I think it is.
Thank you.
Further questions from members of the committee? Representative Romar.
Yeah. Justice Dennehy, how often do you go on the road? Does the court have a set policy, or is it?
No, other than Pendleton, that's the only place where we were required to go. We've been coming to Eugene now once a year for the law school and going to Portland once a year. And then 3 of our judges went to Medford, turns out just for 1 case, but this was part of the dedication of their courthouse. We do have a fairly set policy. We'd like to go to Eugene once a year, and we'd like to go to Portland once a year because of the 2 law schools.
Any further questions from members of the committee? I have one question for the chair. There isn't anything here that would preclude you from going to Pendleton.
No.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Judge Beatty?
I think Mr. Hicks is here and perhaps can be specifically address himself to the others. I have no comments to add to the Chief Justice.
Okay. Fine. We'll move on then, if there are no further witnesses, on House Bill 2074 to House Bill 2075. Judge Dennehy?
Mr. Chairman, I'd prefer to have Judge Hicks speak on that.
Mr. Hicks?
Thank you.
Judge Hicks?
The purpose of this bill is strictly clarification of what I personally think, and I believe has been assumed by everybody, to be an inherent authority of a judge who is assigned by the Supreme Court to a district other than his own, or to our senior judges who are assigned to any district in the court in the state to sit as a judge, that if at the time the appointment term ends, we usually make those appointments for 2 or 3 days or a week or 90 days at the most. Usually when the day of termination arrives, there's something undone. Maybe he has to go back and sentence a criminal person been convicted for a criminal offense, or to make a ruling in a motion, or sometimes to complete a written opinion. And the statutes specifically say that an attorney appointed as a pro tem judge shall have such authority to complete any unfinished business at the termination of his appointment term. We felt that to clarify the authority of a visiting judge or a senior judge in a similar situation, we ought to adopt the very same language from the pro tem statutes into the visiting judge and the senior judge statutes. And that's what this bill does. It takes the exact language that's been in the code for several years for pro tem judges and puts it in the senior judge section and in the visiting judge section.
I have one question. Your practice has been then in the past, when the appointment has run out, to just continue the appointment and go through the additional paperwork to give the judge the authority, or what has occurred?
No, I think maybe a time or two, for one reason or another, the appointment was extended by another appointment and another set of dates. But usually it's something fairly small that has to be done, and if the judge has asked us about it, we've told him that under his authority to finish a case, I think there's some common law along this line, that he can go back and complete what he's done. Now, from a practical standpoint, occasionally, if we send somebody, especially if they're traveling very far, say they go to Klamath Falls from Eugene for a sentencing or something that's going to take 30 minutes, we appoint him again so that while he's down there, he can spend the day. But many times that really isn't practical either. And so this is to take care of the situation that there's something to be done. Maybe it's in the same town where the senior judge, for instance, lives. But it's just to clarify that when he goes over and makes the sentencing or rules on the motion or files his written opinion in the case he took under advisement, that his authority is still there, even though the termination date was a week or two before.
Any questions
from
members of the committee?
Two questions. Does Judge Pro Tem, who's a member of the bar, need these kind of powers also?
Yes, that is in the statute now.
So this would merely equalize the authority that a senior judge has with the powers that are now possessed by Judge Pro Tem?
Right. And also the regular judge who is elected and sitting in Multnomah County, who sits temporarily in Lane County, for instance. No one has ever raised this question except a few of the judges to whom it applied. And they've been a little concerned, well, if I go back to Lane County and finish this case, do I have to have another appointment? And occasionally we have given them another appointment either because we thought they could do something else while they were there, or just because it was a very important case, we didn't want any question raised about it. But there are some case law that a judge can finish what he had commenced.
Okay, well, that really raises or at least indirectly, the only other question I had, and that is that on page 2, on lines 23 through 26, and the same thing on page 3, lines 30 through 33, you say all those things that a judge can do, and I guess I'm not sharp enough to think of anything that is not comprised within them, but would it be better to have a broader grant of authority to the judge simply to complete pending matters rather than spelling out specific things and running the risk of you maybe forgetting something?
Might be if I were drafting it from the beginning. I might do that. My personal philosophy also is to make things as general and flexible as possible and yet defined enough so people understand it. The main reason I drafted this bill and the reason I drafted it this way is because this is a language that's been in the statute for years, and it just seemed like a smaller change just to move the language over. Apparently, to my knowledge, it's never created a problem that we do describe these things.
Okay, and this, you say, exists in the statute already, what, with respect to the judge pro tem?
Attorney general, the pro tem attorneys.
Okay, and so, it's, and you don't know of any problem that may have occurred in this draft, mind
you? Yeah, and it's been in there since, I don't know, 50s, 1950s or 60s, I'm not just sure, but before I was ever a judge, which was 65, it was there then. But we've since expanded it and created new statutes on the senior judges, and somehow this one section wasn't created. And then when I started researching, I realized that there's nothing specific that says a visiting judge has the authority. So.
Okay. Do you have any further questions?
No.
Mr. Rutherford?
How are they compensated during this extended period, or are they?
Yes, if they're working, well, they're paid. They turn in a claim for compensation, and they show on their by half days how much time they put in. So if the judge goes back and works a half day or a full day under this circumstance, he would, under our interpretation, be entitled to pay for that day. On the other hand, if during the term that he's appointed, if he doesn't do anything, he's not paid. He's paid for the days he works, not for the days that he's appointed.
Is there any method by which you can terminate this assignment? Suppose you wanted to any number of reasons that assignment to cease with respect to that case.
It can be withdrawn. I think the statute specifically provides for it, but even if it didn't, I'm positive it could be withdrawn. Because they're serving at the pleasure of the Supreme Court, and they're never appointed for more than 90 days at a time, and usually it's just for a week. Sometimes we even appoint them for a case, a specific case.
But as I understand it, if they're appointed for a 90-day period and the job isn't done or something comes up with respect to the case, and that under this language that appointment would continue with respect to the case under consideration for
whatever time it might
so far as may be necessary. Mm-hmm. I just wondered if that could be terminated sooner by the Supreme Court.
Well, yes, I'm sure it could. We've never had that occur, never had anybody make a request that it be done. Before a pro tem or a senior judge or even a visiting judge will handle anything in another district, he first has to be appointed by the Supreme Court for the authority, and then the presiding judge of that district signs him the case. So there are two people that decide what the visiting judge is to do. And either one of them, I'm sure, could limit what the judge does.
Any further questions by members of the committee? Thank you, Ted. You might want to just stay there. Is there anyone else that wants to testify on House Bill 27-5? Judge Beatty?
John Beatty, representing the Judicial Conference. Just in response to are you concerned, Representative Rutherford, whether there are adequate controls over a senior judge to determine whether or not he's actually working?
Well, I was concerned about...
as a matter of principle.
Right, that aspect of it, and then whether or not he could be terminated if for some reason there was that desire.
I think it's clear he could be terminated, and as to whether or not he's working when he's making a claim for being paid, why the Chief Justice, the Supreme Court, and the Court Administrator are responsible for keeping track of his records and should be in a position to respond at any time to whether their personnel are working. I think as Judge Hicks points out, when he's working in it, he's always working in a judicial district. In almost every instance where there is a presiding judge, and the presiding judge down there is concerned with whether he's working also. And as you know, during the past several years, the budget for pro tems has been a tight one, and consequently there is a good deal of conversation that goes back and forth between the Chief Justice and the presiding judges to ensure that to ensure that there are tight controls over on the amount of pro tem time that's available. That's the only comment I would have, Mr. Chairman.
Any further questions for Judge Bates? Thank you, sir. We'll now turn to House Bill 2076. Judge Hicks.
All right. House Bill 2076 provides that appeals from justice courts and municipal courts shall go to the district court in those counties that have a district court. This bill is requested by the Oregon Judicial Conference, and mainly it originated with the circuit courts in those counties that do not have or that have district courts, because some of them are now getting these appeals from justice of the peace courts and municipal courts, and they feel that if there is a district court in the jurisdiction, they are now courts of record. They are handling the type of cases that the justice of the peace courts and municipal courts are handling. They are more familiar with those cases, and they have a easier method of appeal, since the appeals that go to the court of appeals from the district courts are on a cassette and are not as expensive because there's no type transcript, and they can move faster than the same case being appealed from the circuit court to the court of appeals. So at the request of the circuit judge of the conference, this bill was presented to the conference, and I think it's passed unanimously by both the district and the circuit judges that this is a practical way to handle appeals from justice courts and municipal courts in those counties that have a district court.
How many cases are we talking about here?
I can't give you any statistics on it, but I don't think it's very many. It's never been a burden, heavy burden. And the main reason the circuit court judges would like to have the district courts handle it is just that when they get an occasional case like this, it seems like it's not what they should be working with. They're not used to them. And it just seems like things will go faster in those few cases if they go to a district court. But I'm sure the numbers would not be great. As a circuit judge myself, I'll probably handle half a dozen of them in several years. So they're not a burden, not a big burden as far as numbers are concerned. And I think there also is some merit to the fact that these are smaller type cases involving traffic mainly, and if there is to be an appeal to the Court of Appeals, the appeal from the district court to the same court, the Court of Appeals, is faster and less expensive than having to appeal the case from a circuit court and following the circuit court appellate rules, where you have to have a transcript of a typist type transcript from the reporter instead of the $5 cassette tape.
Representative from that.
Now, Judge Hickson, excuse my lapse of memory, but is there any case in which the appeal is not de novo on the record in these instances?
From a JP municipal court? No.
So in every case, they would be making another record in whichever court the appeal would
take. Yes, it's all appeals from those two courts are a new trial. For instance, a circuit court, a stoplight case, it usually ends up as a 12-man jury. It doesn't have to, could be a six if they chose to, but quite often it's, you argue this matter whether the person saw the red light or went through the red light or not, and you have a 12-man jury case. And that's one of the reasons circuit court judges just feel it's more of a expensive case than the situation deserves, and the district court can handle it faster and less expensive. But they are all de novo.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Mason.
Mr.
Judge
Hicks? Judge Hicks, I'm sorry. You said you could have a stoplight case where you get a 12-man jury. How would we get into a jury situation in a traffic infraction?
Well,
I'm trying to
if the person appeals to the circuit court, it's a circuit court case.
Wouldn't
and
it be
the circuit court, you can ask for the, you can have a jury trial.
If I may say, I have the same question, Representative Mason. I don't think so, but I don't know. You're talking about a traffic infraction.
Right.
It's not a right to trial by jury, or if an indigent, not a right to appointed counsel.
Yeah. So do you get a trial of jury in circuit court automatically?
I didn't think so.
I'm going back to when I was a circuit judge, which was in the 1960s, and maybe that we've changed that infraction business since then.
Except
but I know I sat on stoplight cases as a circuit judge where we had 12 people in the jury box.
Well, I can appreciate
and
that. That was
I haven't been involved in traffic cases since, so They maybe don't have that, but you do have the appeals going to the circuit court, and they handle the circuit court cases.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Judge Hicks, there is nothing within the jurisdiction of any of the JP courts or municipal courts that could possibly be sole jurisdiction of a circuit court, such as an equitable matter or anything that would have to go to a circuit court.
Well, I don't think so. I think district court can hear, they hear some equity cases, although there's very few that are in their jurisdiction. They have limited jurisdiction. The jurisdiction is described, and none have come to my attention, nor did it come up any time during when we were having this bill considered at the conference.
I can't think of any, but
what are you're worried about giving jurisdiction to the
I just worried
district court that it would not otherwise possess the
exactly.
If the district court didn't have jurisdiction, then the municipal and the justice of the peace court wouldn't have had.
I'm making that assumption, but I don't know that's true.
I'm almost certain that's true. I just can't think of any issue that could be in those two courts that wouldn't be encompassed in the district court jurisdiction.
Any further questions?
It's more an observation, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bugis.
I have a bill that's in draft form that I've got by request of Circuit Court Judge Edison out in my district that deals with this 6 and 12 man jury problem on appeal. And I, too, was a little baffled by it, but he says, indeed, it does occasionally happen. And the purpose of the bill is to try to fix at the number of six the jurors when the bill comes out, when an issue comes to the circuit court on appeal. And he says there is a flaw in the law right now, and apparently he's had some experience on it, and I intend to have him down testify when the bill comes on through. But it would be a money-saving procedure if we did pull that to six, and I'm not aware of an individual case myself.
Of course, that
there's something stimulating him to do it. He said he passed it by the judicial conference.
That bill would still be accurate even if this bill were passed, because there are some counties that don't have
They're
a district court, so those cases still would go to a circuit court, and perhaps they should be tried differently in the circuit court.
Any further questions, Judge Hicks? Thank you.
One additional point I have is after this bill was drafted, I discovered that there's two sections following the section that's amended here that refer to circuit court as the appellate court. And I've got suggested additions to the bill which would merely, in those two sections, say that a district court, or if there is no district court, to the circuit court, to clarify the language.
Would you like to present those to the Council?
Thank you.
Is there anyone else to testify on House Bill 2076? Judge Bates, do you have any comments? Or
I have any comments.
Okay. We'll move into House Bill 2077. Judge Hicks, you're up again.
Come on now. All right. This is a little bit of a similar situation to the last bill, but I guess in the reverse. This one was requested by two circuit judges in Eastern Oregon where there are no district courts. And there, occasionally, the justice of the peace is unavailable, and somebody has to act as a judge or a magistrate. And these circuit judges have been doing it under the assumption that something has to be done, and they're the judge that's on the scene, and so they do it. But they requested that the conference submit a bill, and it was passed with a conference, that would clarify that a circuit judge in a county where there is no district court could act as in an emergency to replace a justice of the peace who is unavailable either through death or illness or for some other reason. And as I expressed in the little memo I handed out, there is now legislation that a circuit judge can act in this way in the absence of a district court judge. And there's a statute that says a district court judge can act in the absence of a justice of the peace. but there's nothing that specifically says a circuit court judge can act for the justice of the peace where there is no district court. And again, the judges were a little uncomfortable in assuming this authority without a statutory specific authorization. That's the purpose of this bill.
Questions from members of the committee? Representative Fillmore.
Maybe a stupid one, but I'll ask it anyway. Is there any power that a justice of the peace possesses that a circuit judge would not ordinarily possess within acting within the circuit judge's jurisdiction?
I'm sure there isn't.
You can vary people, you can,
they can
find them. You can,
yeah, the circuit judge has all of the, I'm sure, all of the authority of the justice of the peace and more, and of course also the circuit judge can exercise that authority in a wider geographical area than the justice of the peace. I'm just sure that there isn't any, wouldn't be any problem there. And there is a statute, and it's been on the books for many years and has functioned well, and I've never heard of any problem with it. Or a district judge has the same authority. But for some reason, it was never specifically set forth that in those counties, like Sherman County, where this original Judge Jeldrich was the one that particularly brought this to our attention, he covers Sherman County, which does not have a district court. He has a district judge in Wasco and Hood River County, but he doesn't have one in Sherman County. And so when the JP there is unavailable, he's had to act a few times. It was his specific request that brought this matter to the conference.
Any further questions? Representative Mason.
Yes, Judge Hicks, why is it limited to counties where there is no district court judge? Might there not be a situation in a county that does have a district court judge, you might want a circuit court judge to assume the duties of a municipal court judge for some. Here it seems to be limited just to those counties where there.
The way it's drafted, it's only if there isn't a district court. However, in those counties where there is a district court, the circuit judge already has authority to act as a district judge.
So I would think
that would step in one step down, and just rather than make the bill more complicated, my feeling was it ought to be drafted like this. And the other situation, when it did occur, would be handled in that manner. And I think that we have that instance where that has been done. The circuit judge has, as a district judge, handled matters in the JP court.
Thank you.
And it seems to be functioning well.
Further questions from members of the committee? Okay. Thank you, Judge Hicks.
All right. And we have one other bill in before this legislature, 2142, which was drafted by a staff member in my office for a judicial conference on administration committee, and they, through misunderstanding, incorporated the same idea in their bill. And I drafted this bill and submitted it, and then later found out that they had drafted their bill and had the same matter in it. So we don't want both of them, and I think either the committee here should, when 2142 is heard, remove this. It's the last section of that bill from the bill, or table this bill. Now, that bill is mainly to do with juries, jury management, jury fees. And to me, it's a little bit odd to put jurisdiction in the a bill that's mainly dealing with juries. However, the attorney who drafted it called legislative counsel, and he was advised by legislative counsel that was a good way to handle it. So I think it's up to the committee when the time comes which matter you take. I just wanted to call your attention to that conflict.
Is that still in our possession?
Yes. Okay. They provide the very same thing, but it just shouldn't be in two bills.
Put a reminder down, Dennis, when that one comes up for work session. Okay. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you.
Judge Beatty, do you have any comments?
No comments.
Okay. With that, I'll close the public hearing on these bills. And at this point, it would be the chair's intention to move into work session on this bill. First bill that we'll take up is House Bill 2074.
Chairman?
Representative Rutherford.
I'd move House Bill 2074 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Rutherford has moved that House Bill 2074 be sent to the floor of the House of Representatives with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Representative Fromart.
It was you, was it not, that was relating your conversation with Representative Duff and to the effect that he had no objection to it?
He not only had no objection, he was in support of the bill.
Right.
Okay. Hearing no discussion, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Bugis?
Aye.
Cohen?
Aye.
Frohmeyer?
Aye.
Mason?
Aye.
Richards?
Aye.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Gardner?
Aye. Passes. Now move to House Bill 2076. A motion?
Moves forward to pass.
Representative Bugis has moved that House Bill 2076 be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation discussion.
Chairman.
I think you beat him just by an eyelash. Representative Rutherford.
Maybe the same question. I recall that Judge Hicks submitted some amendments to that bill. Will we have those before we send the bill out?
Do we have those amendments?
Well, we only have three. Give it to the chairman. Vice chairman.
Okay, maybe we can do a little engrossing there. Just bear with me. Okay, on. I guess this would just be added. Judge Hicks, would you like to come up for a second?
It's section four.
Okay.
I think we need another two more sections, one for each of these, I suppose one for each of these sections, to amend ORS 360 and then again amend 380.
Okay, I would...
I withdraw my motion, Mr. Chairman, in order to appropriately deal with the amendments.
Okay, if there's no objection from the committee, we'll move on to the next bill. And if we could have staff make copies of this amendment for everyone.
Well, is there one amendment or two?
I'm not sure.
I heard him talk about 221-360. I have only a copy of the closed amendment to 380.
Right.
Okay,
360 and 380.
Okay. With the committee's indulgence, we'll move on to House Bill 2077. Is there a motion on House Bill 2077?
Move it. Close to that.
Okay. Representative Bugis has moved that House Bill 2077 be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation discussion. Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, this was the one that I believe had a parallel provision in House Bill 2142, and I think we should deal with that at this time, at least state our preference. It seems to me, if I understood the testimony, that we would excise from 2142 that portion which duplicates this.
That would be the chair's intention. Since we are dealing with two bills of two different subject matters, this bill dealing with jurisdiction, the other one dealing with juries, that it would be more appropriate to excise the jurisdictional part out of House Bill 2142. And I have made a note to counsel to bring that up at the time 2142 is before the committee. Further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Bugis?
Aye.
Cohen?
Aye.
Frohmeyer?
Aye.
Mason?
Aye.
Richard?
Aye.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Gardner?
Aye. Passes. Okay. We skipped over House Bill 2075. Is there a motion on House Bill 25? Representative Rutherford.
Move to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Representative Rutherford approved that House Bill 2075 be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation discussion. Hearing no discussion.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Smith.
Am I correct? 2075 is the one that contains the amendments?
No.
That's 2076.
2076.
The chair skipped over 2075.
Okay.
Is there any discussion on House Bill 2075? Okay, hearing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Bugis?
Aye.
Cohen?
Aye.
Frohmeyer?
Aye.
Mason?
Aye.
Richard?
Aye.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Gardner?
Aye. Passes.
Is there any desire, in light of the fact that these all passed unanimously and with the new streamlined House rules, that these bills go on the consent calendar?
We could do that. I was intending to allow the freshman members of the committee to carry the bills, just to give them the opportunity to get up and speak on the floor, I guess, on their maiden voyage and try to explain judiciary bills. And since there isn't a large press of legislation pending before the House, I think I'd probably resist at this point the attempt to put them on the consent calendar.
Okay. However, if they carry them in for a longer period of time than would normally be done on consent calendar, they should be hazed.
Right.
We'll do that next time, Mr. Chairman. Judiciary Committee can set the tone and style for the session.
Okay. That's a good suggestion. Is there, do we have the amendment shed on 2706?
She's making some copies.
Okay. I will declare then, if there's no objection, a 10-minute recess. The clerk will note those members present, Representative Lombard is excused. We'll now take up House Bill 2076. You should have before you two sets of amendments, both labeled House Bill 2076, ORS 221.360. I'll give the committee just a minute to look at the amendments and then ask if there are any motions.
Any order? 360 goes first, Mr. Chairman, I presume.
I don't think
does it make any difference?
I don't think it makes any difference if you want to move 360 before 380 for.
Chairman, I have a question.
Representative Romar.
Maybe I'd ask Judge Hicks on this also.
Judge Hicks, would you come forward?
Judge Hicks, I don't have the statute before me, so it's going to be difficult for me to know this. But is there, by adding this language, is there any possibility that we could create the situation where the party would be required to appeal to the district court and then to the circuit court from the district court, rather than to one of the two of them, and then on to the Court of Appeals?
Oh, I'm sure not. It's the whole intention there, and I think we've worded it correctly, that it's to go to the district, see how they're worded, to the district court, if there is a district court, or to the circuit court. And once it's in either one of those courts, there is no appeal from the district court to the circuit court, so whichever court it goes to, it'll have to, any appeal would have to go to the Court of Appeals.
Okay, so where you use the word trial court, you mean either district or circuit
yeah,
court,
well,
whichever one is
that
the
again
one
was
case.
My version of how to slow, you know, less language. We could have spelled the whole thing out, district court or circuit court, but it's used in the present statute. They talk about trial judge, and I thought as a draftsman it was just better to say trial court rather than repeat that whole sentence.
Okay, I just
and I feel that that's the way any court would interpret that language.
Just trying to make a little legislative history. Any other result would be absurd, but I want it to be very clear.
I think the intent is clear, and when you're trying to, you know, as a you try to interpret what the legislature intended, and I think that the intent is clear from that language personally.
Thank you.
Okay, is there the amendments before you for a motion concerning the amendments?
Mr. Chairman, I move the adoption of the amendments of both of them, 360 and 380, as submitted.
Okay. Representative Bugis has moved that House Bill 2076 be amended by the addition, I guess at the end of the bill, for a Section 5 and a Section 6, with the two printed amendments that are before you. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Richards.
Mr. Chairman, just a question or point of information. If this is going to result in a shift of workload between the district and circuit court.
Representative Richards, I believe that there will be some, but I think that in response to my question initially, that will be minimal. Representative Frohnmeyer.
I just was going to ask Representative Bugis, it was your initial motion, whether that included also the bill would be printed, reprinted in gross.
Do we need that?
I think with two additional sections, you probably ought to have them.
Well, then I would amend it to encompass printing and grossing.
Representative Bugis has moved that House Bill 2076 be amended by the addition of the two sections before you and be printed and engrossed. Is there further discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, it's so ordered. Is there a motion on House Bill 2076 as amended?
Move it to the floor to pass as amended.
Okay, Representative Bugis has moved that House Bill 2076 as amended be sent to the floor, printed and engrossed for the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Bugis?
Aye.
Cohen?
Aye.
Strohmeyer?
Aye.
Mason?
Aye.
Richards?
Aye.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Gardner?
Aye. Okay, that concludes our agenda. It is my intent that I will distribute and contact the members of the committee who will be carrying these bills. And I think we have four freshmen, if I count right. Three freshmen. Okay, we'll have three freshmen at least carrying three of the bills, and I'll select some other member of the committee to carry the fourth bill. One other item by way of announcement. There has been some interest expressed by some members of the committee to sit in on some of the subcommittees that they are not a member of. And it would be my intention as chairman, I'm sure Representative Frommeyer's intention, that any members that would like to sit in would be perfectly welcome to do so. We won't have a vote on that subcommittee, but you are welcome to sit in. Is there any further business to come before the committee? If not, we stand adjourned.